My name is Gunther W. Heller. I live at 17610 West Elmwood Road in New Berlin, Wisconsin. I attended the university as an undergraduate from 1937 through 41, and having joined the Army and served during the World War II, I returned in 1946 and stayed on to do graduate work until 51, earning a master's degree in United States history and another one in education in the area of guidance. Question number 4. I graduated from West Division in Milwaukee, and I graduated there in January of 1933. I then worked first for an architect, the firm of Class and Class Incorporated in Milwaukee, but the times were bad and he didn't have much work, and finally the Civil Works Administration started up and he got a job there, and he helped me get a job there, and I worked for the Milwaukee Park Commission laying out layouts for sprinkler systems. Eventually things got a little better and I went to work for the Caring Company, first in the tool crib and later on doing jig and fixture design. One of the courses I had in high school was drafting, and that incidentally had helped me through many, many years of work while I was getting an education. Later on, it even helped me when I went to the university, because I then got a job at the economics department making charts, all on the basis of this original course. Even when I got into the Army, it helped me, because eventually I began to get a call to go to Europe, and I ran a drafting room in Cheltenham for the service of supply. I did not, question number 5, I did not consider any other colleges. Number 6, why did I select the University of Wisconsin? There were 4 friends who had spent a lot of time together in high school and afterwards. 2 of them went to Lawrence College, one as a football player with a scholarship, the other one got a job through the church as a minister. The 2 of us who were left in Milwaukee became somewhat lonesome, decided we would also go to the university. We had the requisite high school preparation, and we went to Madison and found we could get a job there, and that the tuition and the room and board costs with the job were such that we might be able to handle it with our savings. And we both had assurances that during the summer we could come back to our former employment and get a job which would help us along. Question number 7, we did not attend any other schools. We were quite satisfied with the campus and the courses offered at the University in Madison. Question number 8, when we went to college, since the 2 of us who went were completely independent, parents being gone, and we had no ties back here, we just packed up our clothing, and I happened to have a record player, which was probably the only elaborate piece of equipment I owned, and went to Madison to live at the dormitories. We had a friend's car that brought us and our possessions up to Madison. We didn't own an automobile at the time. Question number 10. I think the most welcome we got, really, we arrived there a little late, as I'll explain in a minute, was from Carson Gully at the dormitories. We happened to walk down the lovely old lake road, and there was a black man fishing, and we stopped to talk, and it turned out to be the head chef at the dormitories, and he was a very jolly fellow, and we talked quite a while about his experiences with the young men, and we felt quite good having finally known somebody at Madison. We did not get much of an advice. Now I'm talking about question number 11, as to what we should choose, but we were intelligent enough. We had been out working for 4 years after high school to know that there were requirements listed in the catalogs, and we signed up for most of the freshman courses. Question 12, there was a student orientation session. However, we had talked to the university authorities before we went up there, and we told them that the money was quite short and we could continue to work until the last possible moment, and they allowed us to do so, and we came to Madison without attending the orientation. We just came there on a Saturday afternoon and started on school on Monday. That had an unusual result, incidentally. That particular orientation session happened to come during a Jewish holiday, and my name being Heller, it seemed to cause some of the Jewish fraternities in Madison to think that I was of their religious orientation. And I had at least two invitations to attend evening suppers with some of these groups. I attended one, and we realized our mistakes. I found out that I wasn't really eligible for this group of young men, and they were very friendly, and I think we established good relations at that particular time. Which later on helped me in Madison when I became what you might call a student politician. We did get a faculty advisor assigned to us. I don't remember the gentleman's name. My friend actually went to the College of Engineering, and so we parted company there, except that we were roommates, of course, at the dormitories. And I received a gentleman in the LNS school, and very nice he was, but he realized we were, or he realized I at least, was old enough. I could make up my own mind as to what I wanted to take, so he didn't spend much time. He just asked me to bring my program, and he would sign it every time, and we had really good relations in that respect. Question number 14. The course of study that I decided on was eventually to teach. I had, when in Milwaukee, been part of a Sunday school class. I was a teacher at Kingsley Methodist Sunday School, and in taking my young charges on hikes and working with them in various ways, I decided that this might be a good profession to follow. Now, I didn't get too much advice as to what to do about this, and when I came to Madison, of course, since I was born, I think I didn't mention that at the beginning. I was born in Vienna, Austria, and came to this country in 1921. But the German language was still quite well developed in my mind, and I was also interested in German literature. Not the basic German courses, I knew that well enough, So I started to take a lot of German literature courses at the university, and this eventually became my major objective. And when I graduated in 41, I had a major in German and minor work in English and in science, which was later to really pay off when I came back after the war and pursued my educational objectives. Question number 15, I never really got any information as to how we were expected to dress for class. We dressed rather informally, not as informal as some of the students that you see today on the campus, but in shirts and sweaters, since most everybody was wearing that sort of dress, we followed suit. I think the only place we had any sort of instruction as to what to wear was at the dormitories, because they felt that the atmosphere at dinner and lunch, at dinner especially, not so much at lunch, at dinner, would be improved if all the young men were there wearing suit coats. And although we resented this order, we did wear it. We fought the idea, but we wore them, and in looking back on it, I think it had a good effect. Much as I hate to admit it, I think young people who dress well seem to react to the kind of clothing that they wear. Question number 17, I don't think I ever ran into any misbehavior of students in class. By and large, most people, when they came to the university, were mature enough, and it was not it was not a time when the individual ego was catered to, and so we behaved because everybody else behaved. The only time I ran into an incident in which I noticed a professor do criticize a student was in one of Professor Oscar Hagen's art history classes, which I incidentally enjoyed tremendously because of the man's tremendous knowledge. But a young lady was sitting in the front row listening intently and also busy knitting. And he just stopped his lecture and informed her that as far as he was concerned, the person could only concentrate on one thing, and in that class it was art history as he was lecturing, and she didn't bring her knitting back to that particular class. By and large, question 19, our classes were co-ed, of course, except the gym classes. And I never noticed anything that women were treated any different than men. We wrote the same examinations and in quiz sections. We had the same sort of discussions. Question 20, some of the lecture classes were quite large. For instance, Kekover's Econ 1 filled Music Hall. And I was introduced to the to Wild Bill's starting gestures. It seems like he would never get started on his lectures, and they were interesting, very interesting. But he wouldn't start until he received his usual skyrocket. And everybody got into the act of Wild Bill, and he smiled, and then he would start his lecture. I think he just didn't want to be bothered with this thing erupting in the middle of his lecture. The discussion sections, both in Econ and in other classes, were small, around 20. Lab classes were the same size, depending, of course, on the amount of equipment available, which was always first class, but there was a limited amount, and so they had to schedule these lab classes in such a way that there were enough equipment for the people using it. I think the only place where I really had a discussion class that I remembered very well was in the field of freshman English. We were lucky to have a young man from an Eastern college by the name of Philip Gray. And he brought some of the habits from some of the Eastern schools. And we even had evening discussion sections at Mr. Gray's house, which were very fine, and a few parties. And it was as close as I got to any faculty member during my years at the university. Most of them I only saw up in front. But because of his very friendly discussion, both in school and at home, we got to know him a lot better, and I think he got to know us quite well too. And he did a lot to help me in my writing abilities, in writing essays and so on. We discussed Shakespeare, and we later on discussed the Muckrakers, and I always look back on that as one of the outstanding classes I attended. I don't remember too many others, I must say, although the education itself was good, and the lectures that we attended, of course, as I had mentioned, like with Mr. Hagen and so on, were always first class. Generally, of course, we were treated to lectures, and occasionally we had discussion sections. During which time there was not really recitation as much as discussion. In non-lecture situation, question 24, how often were we expected to participate? Well, it depended on the people that ran it. As I said, in the English department, it was a regular instructor that ran it. And in Mr. Gray's class, we did a lot of participating. When some of the graduate students that ran discussion sections ran the class, we found ourselves mostly being treated to an explanation of what the professor had said in class and what he might expect on examinations. Question 25, most of the people addressed us by Mr. or Miss. First name, Mr. Heller, for instance, and students generally would say, sir, what was this question about, and so on. Question 26, were we ever truant? I know that attendance was taken, and there were some people that did not attend every session and would ask for their lecture notes. In my case, having worked for a while and really enjoying the atmosphere I was in, I tried as much as possible not to miss any classes. I must say it caught up with me during my senior year when I suddenly found that I had to have a minor in another language, and I took some French, which although I enjoyed, I didn't enjoy the drill and such during class time. And I skipped a number of classes. I wrote good examinations, and I wrote an A on the final, but the lady running the class told me I had too many absences, and so therefore she couldn't give me an A in the course. That being as it is, most of the time the courses were of interest, and there was no sense in skipping it, because I and I know most of the people around me were there because we wanted to learn something. Question 27. We were told what at the beginning of each course, as I'm sure is still being done, what the examinations were and what papers we would have to write and how many of them, and generally, these instructions quite clear. Question 28, there was not really memorization involved in the assignments. We were not only, I think, trained, but exhorted to give our own opinions and not just feedback what somebody had told us, but to let it filter through our mind and draw conclusions from it. I know this happened to me in the medieval history course that I took from Dean Celery. I made the mistake on the first quarterly examination of just feeding back all the things he had talked about, and got the paper back with rather a low grade, saying, I knew these things, that's why I told you about them. I wanted your opinions and what else you had learned. There was, of course, memorization in some courses where it was necessary, as in the science courses and biology and so on, where one had to memorize some of the details. Question 29. The classes met anywhere from 3 to 5 times a week, depending on the number of credits, of course, that were being offered. Question 30. Homework. Yes, there was homework. We were expected to know what we were discussing in history and in other areas. Certain assignments were made, and books were available in the reading rooms of the various libraries, and we were expected to know this material because it was sure to come up in the examinations. I found myself with anywhere from 2 to 4 or 5 hours every night, although I tried as much as possible to relax on weekends. Papers, of course, were a real problem because when they were assigned, it had to be researched and a lot of reading had to be done, and there we sometimes burnt the midnight oil. Especially, for instance, in our dormitory, where study sessions, study hours were kept quite rigorously by the house fellow, we were able to study without any interruptions. Very seldom that a little discussion section would get going, and if so, we tried not to bother other people on the floor that really were intent on working. 31. Availability of professors outside the classroom. As I said, I saw some of them and admired them from afar when they were up in front of the large classes in lecturing, but the only one I really got to know was this young man, Philip Gray, from the English department. And of course he stood out, and that's why I remember him, I'm sure. They had office hours, and we were able to go in there and ask them, but by and large, there really weren't any questions that came up. The lectures were clear, and the instructions were clear. 'Did we have any contacts with professors in non-academic situations? Yes, I think we did have some teas. For instance, when Mr. Dykstra became the president, of course, he had the afternoon at Dykstra's, and some of us often attended, and so did professors, and we had a chance to actually meet with them. Repeating myself, we did have some evening sessions with the English instructor that I had mentioned. Grades usually, question 33, were determined to a large extent on examinations and weekly quizzes, final examinations, papers. I would say very little on participation in class. Question 34, we never really found that there were any professors that said so many would get A's, B's, and C's. We had heard of that sort of thing, but I never ran into it. Question 35 doesn't really concern, because my parents were dead, and therefore there wasn't that much of a concern about what they thought about my grade. Question 36, final examinations were 2 hours long, and they were quite rigorous. Now, We did have blue books that were given out for this examination in each case, and we had to write in there, and we were told, we were given the questions. Now, we were to some extent helped at the dormitories, because the dormitory had a library of books, but they also had a library of examination questions, and all of us, and I'm sure in years before I came to it, would file our examination questions in the dormitory library. And as, for example, I took a physics course, a 5-credit physics course in my freshman year, and a number of us that were in the house went down to the library and examined these previous questions of final examinations in this particular course from the various professors. We made a list of the courses that they, or rather the questions that had been given. We analyzed them, and then we prepared well for this particular exam, because we were able to handle each of the questions that had appeared in the previous 10 years. It had an unusual effect insofar as we went to that examination, and although it was a 2-hour examination, the 5 of us that had done this were able to finish it in 45 minutes, and we all got a very good grade in the course. Now, not everybody spent that much time on every kind of a course, and we found that doing this helped, and we used it in practically every one of the examinations we wrote. Later on, of course, when we got into more upper grade courses, there weren't so many examinations available on file, and sometimes it meant a lot of studying. I remember the dormitories being very quiet, and some young men working practically all night long. I know a young man in the room next to us had a wastebasket, and he filled it with cold water, and he sat at the desk and kept his feet in the water because it helped keep him awake. Unfortunately, he almost fell asleep at the examination on the next day. Examinations, question 37. Exams were usually proctored by graduate assistants, and I myself was able to, for instance, when I was a graduate after I came back after the war, I was asked to work at the law school, for instance, and I helped proctor some of the examinations at that time. 38, as far as we know, of course, there was cribbing. It wasn't a major problem, but there always were, you know, a few things that people wrote down someplace where they hoped they wouldn't be able to be found. Although it didn't happen to me, I did. One of my graduate friends in the School of Education ran across a young lady that seemed to always be pushing her dress above her knee. And when closer examined, she had some notes stuck in her stocking there that she was consulting. So I expect these things did take place, but we didn't run into it very much. We hoped we didn't need that. Question 39, final grades were mailed. We were quite used to handing in a penny postcard and then waiting for these penny postcards to return to find out how we did. Question 41, 40 first, the equipment and the lab courses. I took a physics science course, and I also took a biology course, and in those courses the equipment was quite good, with enough to go around. Professors, question 41, professors that influenced me most. Well, as I mentioned, there were some that left their mark over the years, and I still recall them with pleasure for the knowledge that they brought and the tremendous viewpoint, the tolerance that they taught. And among those people, I remember especially Professor Max Otto and his philosophy courses. I audited them. I did not attend them for credit, but friends had told me about them, and whenever I could, I went in there and listened to the gentleman. I also enjoyed Professor Oscar Hagen in the art history department for his tremendous background that he brought. Dean Celery in the history department, and later on, when I went into the graduate school, people such as Professor Harrington, who was my major professor in history, and Professor Willing, who was my major professor, one of my major professors in the School of Education. Now, these were all people that affected me through the things that, the viewpoints that they held, the knowledge that they had, and the view of the world that they seemed to pass on to us. And I think it was through their teaching that I was able to remain a person that tries to keep an open mind about what goes on around me. Question 42. Again, those people that I named before actually should be among those outstanding teachers, and I think I did give the reasons for them in appearance and intellect and teaching ability. They were really the ones that helped make my university life. And of course, there were other professors who used to come to the dormitories and who also gave lectures in other parts of the university, such as Mr. Buck and Mr. Agard. And all of these people were the ones that were able to inspire us for a desire for knowledge and a desire for fairness. Okay, questions number 43. I did live at the dormitories for 4 years. I decided to live there because it was really the price that affected me. I think it was a good decision. We had a house fellow who, and in other houses the same thing was true, who helped keep study hours, which the house decided on. And we were able to get a lot of work done, and we were able to help each other. And it was a good place for young men to live. We had good food, and the facilities were clean and always well taken care of. And I've never been sorry that I lived at the dormitories. I lived in question 44 in Adams Hall. In Tarrant House for 3 years, and in my senior year, again, due to being a little older than most of the other students, I was able to get a house fellow's job and became house fellow at Richardson House. And again, there I was able to apply what I had learned before. We had a very good house. We actually had the highest average in the dormitories. We worked well, we played together, we enjoyed sports and parties, but we also worked hard during study hours. 45, my roommate, of course, in the first 3 years was the gentleman that I mentioned at the beginning, who wanted to join the School of Engineering and did do so, and he worked his way through by teaching of, he had finished his apprenticeship as a machinist, and he was able to teach some of that while he was at the School of Engineering. I had various jobs myself. One of the biggest, of course, was for my room and board at the dormitories. I worked in the kitchen and carried tubs of food up and down because the upper and lower areas were not yet connected with an elevator, It was good exercise, but it was also hard work. For 2 hours there, I was able to get my three meals, and so the cost of living at the dormitories was helped quite a bit. Our relationship 47 with our house fellow was always a one of respect, and he helped us when we had questions about the university. Question 48, dinner at the dormitories. We were expected, as I mentioned, to dress for supper, although that was not necessary for lunch and breakfast. The meals were good, they were plentiful. We got all the milk we wanted to drink, and oh, Lordy, we used to drink it by the gallons. We had table waiters who were also people that were earning their way through, and they used to keep quite busy in keeping the milk pitchers going. I remember that particularly. Manners, of course, were stressed, although now and then, of course, there was some there was some a revolt against things. We had a prune pudding that was not a favorite, and there was some loud revolts that was engendered when that was served. And eventually, of course, Miss Daly, who ran the dietary area, and Carson stopped serving that sort of thing. But for instance, one of the things that used to go over big was the chili. Chili and sandwiches, and when we had chili, we consumed tremendous amounts of it, and I know so did some of the others, because I remember carrying some of those big tubs of chili up and down. Chili was a hard day for us who worked in the kitchen. The house fellows were present at the meals, and they sat at a different table every night so as to keep their acquaintance up with all of the young men. The food was, as I said, excellent. We all gained weight, and we all enjoyed living there. Question 49, I did get to know, I had mentioned, Carson Gully, and the director of the housing area, Donald Halverson. I got to know quite well, especially later on when I applied for the house fellowship. Question number 50. Yes, we did have rules. The house fellow was usually at the house meetings. We had a house president. At the end of the first year, I became a house president myself, and this is how I got into student politics. At any rate, we all had our say as to study hours, for instance, when the dormitory was to be quiet, who was going to run various social events such as a party or an exchange dinner with girls from some of the either sorority or most often from the girls' rooming houses. Half the fellows would go there, and half the girls would come to our place, and we enjoyed that sort of thing very much. It was always a grand feeling to walk into the dining hall escorting a girl, and all the fellows were quite envious, and the whistles seemed to please the young ladies also. So life at the dormitory, as I said, was an interesting one, and I think was one that benefited me greatly. Question 63. How did we spend our free time? Well, when we were freshmen, the dormitories were still out in an area that was quite wooded, and we spent a lot of time hiking. We had bought a canoe secondhand, and we spent a lot of time on Lake Mendota when the weather permitted. Of course, we were quite busy studying also. We had laid off from studying and from school for 4 years, and it took a while to get back into the swing again of learning the craft of being a student. But after a little while, after I became more acquainted with campus politics, through being a House President and serving on the House President's Council, and got into more work down at the Union. I soon joined the assisting staff as a preparation for running for more offices on the campus, which I later did, and student government activities of all sorts, because the student assisting staff worked at practically every one of the things going on the campus. The members from that were drawn to do work such as pasting notices and running events and working as ushers, and we did any number of things, and became this served to get me acquainted with many things going on the campus, which those who stayed back at the dorms didn't experience. 64 were the places on and off campus. We spent a lot of time. Well, of course, we spent a lot of time at the dormitories, but the Rotzkeller at the Union did draw us quite a bit in the evening now and then. And as the years went by, we got our own little, that was called the Pine Room. It was built underneath the dining areas, underneath Van Hise Hall. And that became a place where we did spend some time in playing cards and in talking. And off campus, we didn't go too far, you know, without a car. You were more or less dependent on other bus transportation, which we rarely used. And so it was usually just around the campus we spent. And we did spend some time at Foamy Fred's. That's Fred Lohmeyer's. Very enjoyable place where the campus kids used to gather for beer, mostly. Question 65, the Memorial Union in our social life. Well, as I said, as I became more acquainted with the campus at large through having gotten into student politics at the dormitories and taking my place in the assisting staff, and thereby getting into many different activities that were going on all over the campus. Many of them, of course, did take place at the Memorial Union, known as the living room of the university. During the years I was there, the new addition with the theater was added, and the excavations were being excavated during the time that I was a freshman, and gave way to the joke, "How do you like the Union as a whole?" Somewhat of a pun. But we did enjoy the things offered at the Memorial Union, the dances, of course, in Great Hall, and the various dining facilities, and beef eaters, for instance, in Trip Commons and so on. And later on, of course, when the new wing was finished, we did enjoy the plays and the new facilities that the Hoofers had in the Union. Question 66. As far as I know, the only limitation in the Union, of course, was the Rotzkeller, which in the earlier years was only available to male students. We didn't fight this. We accepted it. It was a tradition at the university, and so we lived with it. It had changed, of course, after we came back from the war, but that, I think, was the only limitation on anybody in student life at the Memorial Union. As far as I know, question 67, we didn't have any fads or hobbies. If you consider dress, such as saddle shoes and such, that's probably as close to a fad as you can come, and cashmere sweaters for those who could afford them. '68, We didn't really have anything along the line, at least not in my circle of friends, about the books. Sure, we read a lot, but these were things that were assigned for reading and that didn't really give much time to do very much except read the newspaper in the evening or take a look at Time magazine occasionally. As far as novels were concerned, why, we made a sort of an acquaintance with various authors in the various courses we were in, and more or less put them aside in our mind as things that we would follow someday when we got out of this business of education, so we could really begin to read and become educated. Movie idols, I think perhaps there again, once the new wing was added to the Union, of course, and the play circle there, we were able to see foreign films, and we enjoyed that. Personally, I always enjoyed Ginger Rogers for her dancing and some of the films that she acted in. We didn't really have much time to listen to radio programs, question number 70. So I can't really comment on that. With question number 71, we did read the Daily Cardinal and became, through my life at the Union, became acquainted with some of the people that were writers. We also enjoyed and looked forward to The Octopus coming out. A friend of mine, Miney Gordon, Judge Gordon. The Octopus, the Campus Humor magazine, very much. Question number 72, typical date. Well, we didn't have that much money in those days. A Coke or a beer at Foamy Fred Lohmeyer's, a dance at the Union or at the dormitories, a exchange dinner. By and large, those were the things that we seemed to enjoy. We would meet, and you would pick up the girl at wherever she lived, and we would go off and talk, of course, and bring her back, and hope maybe if you knew her well enough to get a good night kiss. But that didn't happen until you had been out several times in those days. There was none of the more instant lovemaking that seems to be prevalent these days. Prevailing student attitudes regarding alcohol was accepted, but the people that I knew, we drank beer, and we drank beer a great deal. Most of it was the 3.2 beer that was available at the Union, and you had to drink an awful lot before you felt any effect. Drugs we just didn't know about. We did use tobacco. Some smoked cigarettes. I smoked a pipe. But sex, for instance, it was always considered desirable, but there really wasn't any opportunity for it. Girls had hours when they had to be in, and on the campus, you had to bring them back in time, so there really wasn't that much opportunity. Very few of us had cars to get away for anything. Of course, there were a few fellows who did talk about this because they dated girls in town where there was a little more opportunity. But really, on the campus, being young men, we certainly thought of it, but the opportunity just didn't arise. Question 74 again doesn't apply because my parents were not available. Question 75, intramural sports popular? Well, we did play a lot of tag football, and we played, other houses in that, and sometimes we also, played against fraternities or against independent houses. Question 77, sports at Wisconsin. Well, As far as I know, from what I remember, the great popularity in my day was boxing. We had good teams, and whenever there was a boxing match at the field house, it was filled. as I recall, you know, you would take some lovely young lady along who, at first, when you mentioned boxing, would sort of say it wasn't a very desirable thing to go to, but when she sat next to you and you watched Omar Crocker boring in on his opponents or any of our other fine boxers, she was out there as loud as anyone yelling for the kill. The female of the species seems to have the same qualities there that the male had. Anyway, we enjoyed boxing very much. We also enjoyed football. We had the coupon book usually, and so we attended all the football games. In those days, there weren't that many people, so you were able to attend all the sporting events with your coupon book. We also attended basketball, although that was, I would say, third in popularity, and occasionally, very occasionally, a track meet and so on. Our coupon book really allowed all those things. While I was a freshman, I was also interested, of course, in one other sport, because it always seemed to me to be something that I would like to take part in. And so I joined the crew and really enjoyed that experience very much, although Lord knows it was hard work getting out there in the shell and rowing every single day, including holidays when we had to stay up there to get to practice. And in wintertime, we would row up and down the Yahara River and turn around at the other end and row back up, because the experience in the water was supposed to be good for us, and I'm sure it was. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to continue after a while. It took a tremendous amount of time, and the job at dormitories became such that I had to be there at time for supper hours when some of the time the crew was out on the lake, and so I gave it up reluctantly, but I enjoyed it while I was in it. 77, Wisconsin, as I recall in those days, was really a national power, a Big Ten power in boxing, and not necessarily in any of the other sports. Wisconsin always had a powerful football team. It used to be able to push the ball up and down the field. It wasn't very good at scoring. But we enjoyed it. We supported it. Wisconsin athletes that remain in my mind, well, of course, there was Pascavin in football. He was always a good show. And in boxing, there were many good boxers, but the one that remains in my mind above all was Omar Crocker, and also known as Omar the Assassin. 79, was it common to take dates to sporting events? Yes, it was. I already commented on that from some of our boxing matches. There was school spirit at sporting events. I don't recall ever booing anybody, booing the other side. I think that's the sort of thing that came in after the war, but in my day it wasn't anything that you saw. We didn't always agree with the referee, but we accepted it. The social events of the year, question 80, well, of course, there was the junior prom, and there was various, the soft shuffle, and there was winter carnival, which I myself was lucky to be co-chairman of in 39, and by and large, those were the large social events. Most of the dances were, of course, sponsored by the student board, and so being on the assisting staff in my sophomore year and later on stayed with it for the next 3 years, I had to furnish people for all of the different social events. The assisting staff was more or less of a training ground for student government, and it served as that for me, and I'm sure it served as that for other people. You had to amass a certain number of points, all of which were given to you for taking part in all of the things you did, whether it was as an usher or whether it was in setting up the band and or taking tickets or parent weekend and serving as guides or what have you. Everything had points, and this is what the assisting staff record kept track of. And to become then a member of the student board or some of the other governing bodies, you had to have a certain number of points that then qualified you to run for further student office. Did I have a part-time job while attending school? Well, that was question 81. Yes, I certainly worked at the dormitories in the kitchen. I put in many hours there to take care of my room and board. Later on in my senior year, I became a house fellow, and so I didn't have to work in the kitchen anymore. As a graduate student, I worked again at the union desk. As a desk clerk, I put in many hours there. And I had a side job for the biochem lab, feeding animals. And during all my undergraduate years, I think I mentioned before, I also worked as a draftsperson for the economics department for Professor Groves, making some of the econ charts which he used in some of his lectures. This was the National Youth Administration job. So there again, my drafting ability from my years in high school stayed me in good stead. Oh, there were other small jobs here and there, and of course during the summertime I always went back to Milwaukee and worked at the carrying company again, either in the drafting room or in the machine shop, and earned enough money to come back. And my senior year I even acquired an old Model A Ford. It wasn't very new, but it served, and it really helped make my senior year. Question 82, religion in our life. Well, I would say it played more of a role in our freshman year than in the later years, especially since the dormitories did not serve Sunday evening meals. And I think this was done with malice aforethought, since a lot of the fellows wouldn't have ever left the dorms if it hadn't been for that. Some of us used to go down to Union Rapskeller, but it always was enjoyable to go out to University Avenue to some of the churches. And we did take part in some of the young people's meetings because they also served a reasonably, very reasonably priced Sunday evening meal. Of course, we used to occasionally go also on Sunday morning. Sometimes it just felt good not to have to get up, but we used to go over there to either the Methodist church, or we enjoyed some of the sermons over at the Congregational church also. But beyond that, I don't think we took very much part in the religious life of the campus. There were some students that did and enjoyed it very much, but as far as I was concerned, the activities I was in, plus keeping in school and working, were enough to satisfy me, and I didn't have to go into that particular direction. We skip 83 to 90. Question 91. Why weren't we members of fraternities or sororities? Well, to some extent it was a matter of expense. It was cheaper to live at the dormitories. You had a certain amount of money that was needed to be in the fraternities. We didn't really need those of us who got into student government and lived at the dormitories where there was a fine social life made available for us. We felt we didn't really need the things that the fraternities offered, and so there wasn't really the desire to take part in their social life. Later on, when I became more prominent on the campus, on the student board, I had many invitations to join parties at different fraternities and sororities, and enjoyed the contacts very much in those areas. But that, of course, made it even more difficult to think about joining any one of them, because we found that a lot of the young men and women, especially the young men, of course, with fraternities I met, were equally nice at some of the other places, and that would have made choosing difficult. As it was, working your way through school with various jobs and so on made it more or less impossible to take on this additional expense. Question 92. I think I commented on how my independence really did affect me. I personally never felt any animosity toward the Greeks. They were fine people. If I could have afforded it, I might have taken a different route, but as it was, we didn't. It certainly didn't affect me at all. During my years as an undergraduate, I more or less represented the dormitories at many of the campus events, and certainly on the student board. I recall the badger in commenting on my senior year at the student board said something about unser Gunther, who represented the dormitory über alles policy at the student board. Well, this was my background and the backbone of my active political life. And of course, being a member of the dormitories, I tried to push its concerns in relation to those of the rest of the campus. Question 93, benefits of remaining independent. Well, I wouldn't be able to say much one way or another. There were no bad effects to remaining there. Certainly the benefits I had was that I was able to choose my friends from all over the campus, and I wasn't more or less constrained to deal with a particular group of young people, such as a lot of the fraternity students were, and by nature living in the house, of course, were confined to a particular group of acquaintances. Question 94, involvement in student government. Yes, I think I mentioned already that I became a house president at the end of my freshman year. Then the House President's Council of the dormitories, and then of the university as a whole. I moved into the assisting staff because of my acquaintance at the union, and really got acquainted with the rest of the campus, with all the activities that were going on. Working on the assisting staff earned me enough credits to be able to run for the student board, and in my junior year I ran a campaign predominantly at the dormitories to be elected to the student board. It was an interesting time, talking to a lot of people and trying to find issues to promise people. At any rate, the dormitories, because of my background there as house president, got behind me, and I was able to join the student board, and stayed on student board during my junior and senior year. And while there, I then, from having been a member of the assisting staff, became chairman of the assisting staff, and furnished the young people that were able to help us in the various campus events, the dances and all the other events, student weekend, parent weekends, and all the other things sponsored by the student board. And so I think I remained quite active in that area. I was also chosen, I suppose it was a political payoff or so, but it was because of my interest in outdoor life also. And that Bud Bremer, who is now still in Madison, and myself became the chairman of the Winter Carnival in 1930, well, during my junior year. Question 95. We didn't really have any radical movements going on at the time on the campus. There were in the country, and we did have a small chapter in Madison, although my friends who had gone to Lawrence were more active at that school in it. It was called the Veterans of Future Wars. Students became quite active and claimed that they needed to have the bonus that they would get for having served in the armed forces before they went, so that they would at least be still alive to spend it. And the Veterans of Future Wars had several marches on the campus. Although I was never an active member of the group, certainly I was in sympathy with the idea. We weren't too active, you know, in our attitudes toward the war. Living at the university, although we should have been exposed to it, we were nevertheless living in an ivory tower. We didn't really know what was going on in the world. We didn't realize what the dictators of Germany and Italy were doing to their people. And I'm afraid I didn't realize what was going on in the Holocaust, even during the time that I was in the armed services. There were certain things that were kept away from us in the newspapers. And because of our campus concerns, of course, we weren't that interested in national politics. I did become more interested in it after I came back as a graduate student. I served as a chairman for the La Follette group on the campus. But as an undergraduate, not too much activity in any other radical group, although I'm sure some of it was probably going on, but we weren't aware of it. Besides the question 96, besides the things that I had already mentioned, of course, I did enter a lot of activities with the Hoofers. I enjoyed the hikes and so on. I became a member of the Badger in my senior year and was in charge of the dormitory section for the Badger. I was elected to Iron Cross as a senior, and I was a charter member of Reformed Dormitory Fraternity, a dormitory honorary fraternity called Delta Epsilon. I helped write the rules for it and became a charter member of that. I was also lucky to be elected to Phi Kappa Phi. Question 97, Dean of Men, of course, was the famous Dean Scott Goodnight. And the Dean of Women was Mrs. Troxel Greeley. I met both of them. I met Dean Goodnight as a freshman when I was elected to Phi Eta Sigma. And the acquaintance stayed for 4 years. We had some pleasant conversations now and then through my associations with student government. As a fact, I even took some billiard lessons from the good dean. '98, did you have any personal contact with any of the other deans? No, not that I recall, at least. As to campus figures, yes. Mr. Dykstra, when he became president, had the open house at the Dykstra's, and as a fact, I got to know Mrs. Dykstra better because she was the gracious lady in charge. But we also met President Dykstra at those times. Mrs. Dykstra had a phenomenal ability for remembering names. She would meet you once, and then out of the, what there were 10,000 students at the university, the next time she saw you, she would know you by name and call you by name. I always envied this tremendous effort of will on her part to be able to do this. We later met, as a graduate student, I met President Fred, of course. As far as the earliest president, President Glenn Frank, I used to see him on the campus. We never met. I did get an acquaintance with the gentleman who later became a president of the university, Dr. Harrington, because he was my major professor in the history course as a graduate student. And a real fine man he was, also very helpful. Question 100, no contact with the regents. As far as the relationship, question 101 with merchants and citizens of Madison, I think we lived more or less in an isolation there. We didn't get out too much into the city. We might have gone up and down State Street now and then, but beyond that, we didn't really get to know the city of Madison that well. I got to know the two lakes, of course, but as far as merchants were concerned, no. Uh, 102, yes, it was the Depression, and I don't think it had any bad effects on us. We had to work, of course, and this one itself was good. In looking back on it, met some real fine young men and women that stayed friends for the rest of my life. Having to work, we also seemed to appreciate more some of the things that the university had to offer. What effect, question 103, did World War II have on us? Well, I mentioned that before the war started, we lived in an ivory tower. We rarely were aware. Oh, I'm sure there were some that were more aware than the rest of us, especially the students from New York, who seemed to be more worldly oriented than we were in the Midwest. But we didn't really get too much knowledge of what was going on in the world until after we came back. Career goals, question 104. I had mentioned that I had been interested in becoming a teacher at one time. I really didn't carry through on that until after I came back from serving in the Army. When I went into the history department as a graduate student, and at that time I also decided I would take an education course now and then. And after I finished my master's in U.S. history under Dr. Harrington and Dr. Bester, who came during one summer, I then went to the School of Education and said I'd like to become a graduate student here. And they said, but first you have to have so many courses of this and that. And I showed them I had been taking some of those courses already, which was very much of a surprise to them. And I went into the area of guidance work with Dr. Edgerton, who incidentally was also a tremendously fine man who always found time to listen to all of your problems. You sometimes had to wait a long time before you got in because he was so busy listening to everybody else's problems, but once you got in, you had his time without any interruption. Did the education prepare me for career goals? Yes, I would say history and guidance helped prepare me. Practice teaching, on the other hand, in those days was not very much. For whatever reason, we were unable to use the Madison schools for practice teaching, and so we were all, you might say, concentrated at the University High School. And as I remember, my teaching, my major field of history, there were about five of us in one class, and so we got around to teaching maybe one day every fifth or sixth week. which wasn't much of a preparation. However, there was some preparation, and I know when I got to teaching in Milwaukee, I was able to make up for lost time. The factual preparation, however, was excellent in the field of history and in guidance and in German, all of which areas that I later did teach. Question 107. The quality and scope of education at the UW. I must say some of the best years of my life were spent at the university. It was a sound education, and it instilled a love for knowledge and learning that has lasted for the rest of my life. Now I'd also like to comment a few things about the item that I wrote my letter about originally, about the work day on the campus. Some of the background: the university needed some good publicity. Governor Heil was the governor at the time. He wasn't especially in favor of the university. We had received some bad publicity from the Milwaukee Sentinel. Some reporter had gone up there after Liz Waters was built and spent some time there as we were bringing girls back, you know, waiting for the time that they had to go upstairs. And the article ran a big feature about passion pits at the Liz Waters, all of which was a lot of nonsense. Oh, sure, you might want to kiss the girl goodnight. And the local dean at Liz Waters had her own system for solving these problems. Just about the time you went into a clinch with a girl to kiss her goodnight, somebody would be tapping you on the shoulder. And there was this good lady with a big box of chocolate saying, "Won't you have a chocolate?" And, you know, after that, it was hard to to get back into the topic on your mind before she had interrupted. At any rate, the university needed good publicity, and we discussed it for a while on the student board, and Buck Avery, who was president at the time, and myself decided we would try to sponsor a work day at which all the students on the university would show the rest of the state that we were interested in helping the university. Now, what kind of a project were we going to get into? Well, the lake road at that time was falling apart. Erosion had taken place, and it became quite difficult to go along the lake road. I was very much aware of that because it was my path from the dormitories to the union. And we decided on that as a project. We got a lot of publicity out on it. Posters appeared all over. Organizations took place. For instance, I organized the dormitories, and we signed up houses. And Buck Avery, who was the organizer of independent houses and the sororities and fraternities, every one of the houses was approached, and practically everyone agreed to take a section on of this project. Now, we also, part of the advertising was, we had a line strung across the campus, right across in front of Bascom Hall, with a bunch of overalls hanging from it, each one's a different letter spelling workday. This helped generate publicity. We talked to a lot of people. It was one of the contacts we had with the merchants in the city. The Faubach Brewery consented to send us some free beer, which we gave out after each section finished their house. We got a lot of cooperation from musical organizations. In various ways, both for dance bands at the end of the affair and at the beginning of it. We got a lot of publicity through Mr. Galistel, who at that time was the superintendent of buildings and grounds. He ran some sort of a government project in which he was able to get a lot of equipment together, hundreds and hundreds of shovels and rakes and picks, and wheelbarrows, of course, which were the tools needed for this sort of a project. The School of Engineering cooperated, and the surveyors laid out the lake road and put in stakes all the way along. And we went to the dormitories, and the dormitories agreed to furnish lunch at a minimum cost, just what it cost them. And of course, the student board picked up the cost for this project, for the advertising and for the lunch. And finally, the day came. It was a beautiful Saturday. The weather was good. And early that morning, Buck Avery and myself and a few others who had helped in organizing it stood in the middle of the lake road, somewhere beneath Liz Waters there, and practically prayed for success. We weren't sure what was going to happen. Then we heard the bands that we had scheduled at both ends. There was one band at the Union end and another band scheduled at the dormitories. And as they came marching toward us, along came all these groups of students. And, you know, within an hour, every one of the 30, 40-foot sections was a beehive of activity, with students digging out the old lake bed and pushing it on the side and fixing up the approaches to keep it from being washed away again. And the piles of cinders which Mr. Galistel had furnished for us, that he had gotten from the heating plant, were being filled in. And as each section worked, of course, they got tickets, and they would take off to the dormitory. End of it were the lunches, beef sandwiches and coffee and milk were being served, and they'd come back again and get to work again. And by mid-afternoon, about 3 o'clock, slowly each section was finished. And as each section was finished, they got tickets for free beer at the Union end, where the bands were playing. And by 5 o'clock, the whole project was finished, and those of us who weren't completely tired out and full of blisters from all the work were busy dancing down at the Union, out on the round end of the street there. It was a good project. It certainly had good publicity in the Madison papers, and in the Milwaukee papers mentioned it, and some of my friends from New York even had written to New York, and it was mentioned in some of the New York papers. It was a good project, and I think it caught on. It caught the spirit of the university students. They wanted to show the world that they were interested in doing something and not just in getting a free ride from the legislature. The project was carried on. Of course, most of us who organized it were gone for 4 or 5 years during World War II, but it seems to have lasted, and there were even some remnants of it left after we got back in 1946. They still carried on some of the workday projects. And of course, the Lake Road remained as evidence of what we had done. Well, that's it. I hope this will satisfy some of the need for information that I was able to recall and give. And thank you for your interest. Incidentally, I do have a lot of snapshots of the workday. one in particular that I find amusing. The present Chief Justice Heffernan from our state Supreme Court is busy waving a shovel, and of course many other students taking part in it. If any of this material would be helpful, I'll be glad to send it along.